chapter Bishalach, chapter 13, pasuk 17. Vahi Bishalach Paro et Ha'am. It was when Pharaoh sent out the people. It's already very, very odd that the Torah expresses it this way. And it was when Pharaoh sent the people out. I mean, how would we put it? And it was when God took the Jews out of Egypt. No, when it was when Pharaoh sent the Jews out. Pushed them out. All right. Okay. Okay. Right. You're right. But why would we stress that more than the fact that it's God who's taking us out? It's as if like, it sounds like we're giving him credit. Exactly. That's what it sounds like.
God said that the Egyptians throw you out after that.
It's correct. Yes, you're right. As far as the facts are concerned, you are correct. But the facts we know already from last week's portion of the week. Here we are, like, we are summarizing what happened. And it was when the Jews went out of Egypt. So how do we describe? Like, how do they go out of Egypt? But you are right as far as the facts is concerned. It's true. The fact is that they pushed us out. But why should we repeat that fact? That's not the important factor here. Velo nacham Elohim derech eretz plishtim. And God didn't lead us through the normal way, which would be the normal way of going from Egypt to Israel. There would be the straight way. The shortest way would be the way by the coast, along the coast, the Mediterranean. That's called the Philistine road. Why? Because that's where the Philistines were. You know, the Philistines were in Ashkelon, Ashdod, Gaza. All those were Philistine areas. So it makes sense that we should go through that area. So God decided not to do it. Ki karov hu. Now, there is an argument about what it means, ki karov. Because it's too short, the way it's too short? Is that the reason why God didn't take us? Because it's too short. That some people say that's the way to read it. Because it's too short. They aren't ready yet. Why? Ki amar Elokim pen yinachem ha'am. Because as soon as they come close to war, birotam milchama veshavu mitzrayim, they'll go back to Egypt. You see? If they are too close, so they'll go back to Egypt. So Hashem is to take them through another road, that it should be, that it should take longer to get back to Egypt. It's strange. This is what it says in verse number 18. Vayasev Elokim et ha'am derech hamidbar. This is the second way, right? Derech hamidbar, through the desert, right? Like a detour to the east.
But they can always run back the short way.
So you're saying, well, as soon as they come there, they can come back. Well, because there are two ways to enter Israel too, right? Because if you go the desert way, then you can go in without going through the Philistines. You only come across the Philistines if you go the road through the road of the coast. But if you take the long road, you don't even have to pass by the Philistines. So for some reason, there was a fear of facing the Philistines here. And then it goes on to say at the end of verse number 18, Vachamushim alu bnei Israel me'eretz Mitzrayim. What does it mean, Vachamushim? So Rashi brings down two interpretations. The simple one, even today, modern Hebrew, Tachmoshet, or the word Chamushim, even in modern Hebrew, means armed. They went out armed. They went out prepared for war. Alu bnei Israel. But Rashi gives a second interpretation too, and Rashi says it means v'chamushim, hinting to one-fifth, chomesh, one-fifth. What does that mean? It comes to hint that the Jews were now, I'll read to you Rashi, because I'll tell you another interpretation of what Rashi says here. Rashi says that the other interpretation is v'chamushim. Well, the first interpretation is Hamushim Elo Mezuyanim, Klei Zayan. Mezuyanim, that's arms. Armed, right? And then after a parenthesis, if you have towards the end, the last line, davar acher, another interpretation, v'chamushim, chamushim, mechumashim. What does it mean? Echad mechamisha yatzu. One out of five went out. 20% of the Jews went out. V'dalet chalakem, and the four fifths, meitu, they died b'shloshet imei afela, during the days of darkness. Four-fifths of the Jews died. Now, we spoke about this particular Rashi, and we said that there is another interpretation in Rashi. Now, it's in the second statement of Rashi. Because here there is something extremely strange, if you take a look in verse number 17 and 18. The Jews can sometimes, throughout the Torah, sometimes they are called Bnei Israel, sometimes they are called Am, or Am Bnei Israel, or Am Israel, or just Am, plain Am. So take a look how the Jews are being referred to here in verses 17 and 18. Vayi b'shalach paro et ha'am, which is Am, the Jews, right, are called Am, right? So once. Ve'lo nacham Elokim derech el prishtim ki karovu. Why? Ki amar Elokim, because God said, pen yinachem ha'am. Again, how are the Jews referred to as Am? And in verse number 18, Vayasev Elokim et ha'am. And God took the Am. So three times in a row, the Jews are referred to just as Am. And the fourth time it says, Vachamushim alu bnei Israel. Armed, who was armed? The bnei Israel. Now, we have a tradition. And that tradition is mentioned in a lot of our commentaries, very early commentaries, that whenever the Jews are described as Am, we are talking about the lower level Jews, the masses, or even the lower masses. And whenever we talk about Bnei Israel, we are pointing out Jews with special characteristics, right? So, according to this, if it says here that Vayhi b'shalach paro et ha'am, we are just describing the perception of the masses. Do you know how the Jews perceive the going out of Egypt? In spite of the fact that they went through the 10 plagues and they knew how much the Egyptians suffered, right? But at the end, who is the one who is letting us out of Egypt? To the Am?
Paro.
Why? Because they still had a fear of Paro. Do you understand? Exactly. At this point, there is still a fear of Paro. The moment Paro changes his mind, we are his again. So therefore, the Torah is pointing out that the Jews are not completely free as yet. As long as we feel that it's Paro who is sending us out and not God, then we are still dependent on Pharaoh. Okay, but who are those people who feel that way? Is it the whole of Israel? Not at all. It's only the Am, the lower levels. Remember what I told you. Am, whenever it says the Jews are referred to as Am, period, we are talking about the lower levels.
The lower levels of the 20%.
Wait. We are not talking about 20% yet. We are going to come to the 20%. The lower levels of the Jews, which includes also the Gentiles who converted to Judaism also, they also were included in the masses. And then it says, and therefore God didn't take the Am derech eretz plishtim. Why? Because the Am, the moment they see war, they go back. Now, what does that mean? Literally, they're going to go back to Egypt. That's very, very difficult to understand that they would go back to Egypt. What's waiting for them in Egypt? Anything better? They're afraid of Pharaoh. Why would they go back to Egypt? According to many commentaries, many times when the Torah describes a possibility of something might happen, the Torah not only describes a possibility of certain actions, certain things that might happen in actuality, even thoughts sometimes are things that the Torah will consider as something which is dangerous for the Jews. The fact that the Jews will go through the Mediterranean, and if they have a difficult time going through that road, because the Philistines are very difficult people to deal with, and the thought will occur to them, why don't we go back? Why did we have to go out of Egypt? Right. That thought in itself means that you haven't left Egypt yet. Like some people put it, Egypt didn't leave them yet. They can't get rid of Egypt. Egypt is still part of them. So therefore, Veshavu Mitzrayim doesn't mean literally, physically, they'll go back. How will they go back, right? Who will lead them? Not necessarily will they go back to Egypt. But the thought will cross their minds that they'll come back to Egypt. Therefore, it's bad for the development, for the spiritual development of the Jewish people that they should have that experience. Again, who are we afraid will mentally go back to Egypt? Again, the Am, Peninachem Ha'am. So therefore, because of that, the Am has to take the long way. But here the Torah is afraid that you are going to think that all of the Jewish people are at that level. So he says, no, really, don't worry about it. There was a group of Jews that we don't consider Am at all. 1/5 of them are Bnei Israel. Now, that does not mean that the rest of the Jewish people, right, all died. Because literally Rashi says that 4/5 died and 1/5 went out, right? I'll show you how this type of a midrash should be understood. How do we know it? Because there is another midrash, a similar midrash, but there the numbers are even more unusual. Listen to this. There is a statement, we may even have spoken about it. There is a statement in the Talmud in Sanhedrin. The Jews entered Israel, right? How many of the Jews who left Egypt entered Israel according to our tradition? Two. Kalev ben Yefuneh and Yehoshua ben Nun. The two Jews who went into Israel and of those who left Egypt. So the Talmud makes the following deduction from the fact that the Torah puts together they're leaving Egypt and they're entering Israel. The same way when they entered Israel, only 2 out of 600,000 went out. The same way those who left Egypt, it was 2 out of 600,000. 2 out of 600,000 Jews left Egypt. Okay, no, statement in the... No. Right, correct. But the same way 2 out of 600,000 entered Israel, the same way 2 out of 600,000 left Egypt, which means how many Jews were in Egypt? 600,000 times 600,000.
Times
300,000, which equals to what? 18 billion Jews. 18 billion Jews, exactly. 18 billion Jews. And it's impossible. It's impossible. Completely unreasonably impossible. It's not, you can't...
That matters, but this matters impossible.
So wait. We just, once we realize that there is a pshat in that matters, we may say, well, the same pshat applies here. So the... One of the great, great... Yeah? You see, the point is like this. The ratio is that 2 out of 600,000 entered Israel. Right? And now it says like this. 2 out of 600,000, and now it's 1 out of 300,000, left Egypt. And now it's of the Jews living in Egypt, only 1 out of 300,000 left Egypt. Which means that in Egypt itself, you had 600,000 times 300,000, which makes it 18 billion, which is impossible. So, says the easy to remember, the author of the Or Sameach wrote a book on the Chumash called Meshech Chochmah. He says, no, that's not what it means literally. That's not what it was meant to in the first place. He says, what the Torah is telling you is that the same way that it was worth it to do all the miracles for the 2 out of the 600,000, the same way the Torah is telling you, even if 2 out of 600,000, Moshe and Aaron, just for them, it would be worth it for God to do all the miracles. So never look at, well, for those few Jews, God is going to make miracles and take care of things and make sure that things happen right. Numbers don't matter by us. Even 2 out of 600,000 is important enough. Do you hear the statement? Which means that when the Talmud says 2 out of 600,000 went out of Egypt, the Talmud is not telling you facts. The Talmud is telling you what could have happened if necessary. Okay? Sure, thank God that didn't happen. It didn't. God deemed it unnecessary. But the Talmud is telling you what could have happened, and still God would have made the miracles. Okay? Now, that means that very often when the Talmud is telling you something which on the surface sounds like a literal fact, what the Talmud is telling you is these are the facts that might have happened had it not been that God decided otherwise. Okay? Now, once we accept this principle of the Meshech Chochmah, of the Or Sameach, and we apply it here, the numbers here are much less staggering, but it's still pretty large. You see, even if you're going to say, right, that 1/5 of the Jews went out of Egypt, not 2 out of 600,000, but 1/5. So then you must say then that at least, right, how many Jews were there in Egypt at the time? Now, remember, 600,000 only includes men above the age of 20. The chances are that 600,000 men means about 3 million Jews. So it should be about 12 million. 12 million. That means in the 3 days of darkness that they were supposed to bury all the Jews that died, how many Jews died? About 12 million? 12 million Jews to be buried in 3 days. Without the Egyptians being able to realize afterwards that there are any Jews missing. Do you hear? Because that was the point. God wanted them to die during the 3 days of darkness in order that the Egyptians shouldn't know the Jews died. You tell me, is it possible that 12 million Jews should die and Egyptians shouldn't realize? Very unlikely. Possible, but extremely, extremely unlikely.
In this time frame that we've seen all of these this year, with all these strange occurrences, miracles, plagues, whatever you want to call them, are happening, why couldn't it happen? Could be done.
It could be, but you see, we are not forced anymore. No, wait. Listen to my point. My point is not that it's impossible. It's possible. But now we have another alternative. Now we have the alternative of the Meshech Chochmah approach. The Meshech Chochmah approach is that such a midrash, which tells you numbers, the midrash doesn't necessarily tell me factual numbers, but what might have happened if necessary, or what God planned originally before he decided to have pity on us, to have mercy on us. So which one of the two alternatives now seem more reasonable? You understand? This is what I mean. Once we have the Meshech Chochmah, then we can say simply that this statement that Rashi makes, that 1/5 of the Jews went out and 4/5 died, doesn't mean that those are the people who actually died. Those are the people who deserve to die if God in his great mercy wouldn't have taken out all those that didn't deserve to die. Do you understand what I'm saying? So which one of the two approaches now seems more reasonable? I would say the second one, the approach of the Meshech Chochmah. That numbers don't mean necessarily actual fact, but it's telling you what could have happened. Now, by the way, just as an aside, I found, this Meshech Chochmah seems to many people too revolutionary. How can you say that the rabbis don't mean exactly what they say? Well, I have found in much earlier commentaries, the Maharal of Prague, on exactly the same type of an approach. Listen to this midrash. There is a midrash which says, every woman in Egypt had 6 children all at once, 6 duplets. Well, that's not all, says the other one. Well, I'll prove to you that they had 12 each time, right? And the third one says, well, I'll prove to you that 60 came out at once. Right. Fact, right? That's what it says. Says the Maharal of Prague, I'll tell you what it means. No woman can give birth to 60 children at once and they should have a human form. How big will they be? He actually says, as an etzba, like a finger, he says. So what does the Midrash mean? The Midrash means that the blessing that God gave to the Jews was so great that had there not been a physical impediment to having 60 children, they would have had 60 children. Of course, no woman physically can have 60 children. She's limited by her physical capacity. So whatever her physical capacity was, that's what she had. So she could have one child, two children, three, five perhaps. It just means that the limitations are not from God's blessing, but from the physical nature of humanity. So therefore, when it says 60, what does it mean? That was the potential, even though in actuality it could be one or two or three or five. You understand what I mean? Isn't it exactly the same approach? And that's already the Maharal of Prague, a much earlier commentary, who approaches it the same way. That he says, when the Talmud tells you historical facts, you always have to ask yourself, is it telling you actual facts, historical facts, which is usually never the concern of the rabbis? The rabbis are not telling you history, stories. The rabbis are telling you something deeper. That is something deeper. We want to know how far was the blessing of God to the number 60. That's how intense it was. And it gives you a whole interpretation. What is this symbolic meaning of the number 60? Okay? So following this approach, it's easy to accept this interpretation of Rashi, that one-fifth went out because they deserved it, and four-fifths went out even though they didn't deserve it. They are the Am. Yeah.
My understanding that when we talked about the large numbers, that the women weren't carrying to the normal 9-month term. They were having children that are much more
mature.
This was the mess.
You see, it couldn't be. I'll prove it to you. You know why? Because it says that you know how Moshe's mother was able to fool the Egyptians for 3 months? Because she gave birth prematurely. Implication. So say it's after 6 months. So how long did the normal Jewish woman give birth? So you see that it's not that way. That she was an unusual case. That's why she was able to fool them. Also, according to the Maharal, says that depends on the physical makeup of the woman. Meaning the blessing was still number 60. The limitations of the blessing is, or depends what you do. It says, for instance, let's say, for instance, somebody came to the Chafetz Chaim, and he says to him, he asked him whether he should open a second business or not. Right? So he says like this, is there enough room in the present business, assuming that God gave you a blessing for $1 million? $1 million a year. Could be that God on Rosh Hashanah, on the beginning of the year, he gave you a blessing that you should make $1 million. So he says, you must give God the possibility to channel the $1 million. So if you say that your present business can't possibly give you the $1 million, then you are creating the limitation. God gave you $1 million, you are creating the limitation. But if the present business allows for $1 million, what do you have to open a second one? So he gives him the example. If you have one barrel of wine, right, and you have one hole for the wine to come out, if you make a second hole, more wine will come out. He says, well, that's what he says. So obviously not. But if you didn't make any hole at all, even though God gave you $1 million, but you didn't make any preparations to accept that number, so it's not the same thing with the 60. God gave every Jewish woman the capacity to have 60 children. If she has limitations, fine, good. So it's the limitations of her physical capacity, but it's not no limitations in God's blessing. That's the idea behind it.
Over there in that Gemara in Sanhedrin, it says also that I'm going to, at the time of Mashiach.
Exactly. Exactly. You're right. The conclusion of the Gemara says, and the same for the Messianic period. What does it mean? That has, you know, that so many. It means that even if necessary, I'll do for a few Jews what I would do for a trillion Jews. It makes no difference to me. That's what God means. God means to say, I don't care how many Jews are going to be left. So don't be worried about a few Jews. I'll do the same miracles for two or for a trillion. It makes no difference to me. That's the meaning of the statement of the Talmud. Yeah.
So now you're saying that although it's possible that during the darkness, like a darkness, three-quarters or four-fifths may have died.
Possible.
Possible.
But not necessarily so.
Not necessarily, because
exactly.
Now they mentioned that only one-fifth was deserving, four-fifths weren't deserving.
Right.
So more likely instead that fourth of this should have died but they actually lived.
Four-fifths should have died. Some of them did die. We don't know how many. But a large part actually lived. So according to this, now we can understand what it means. The Bnei Israel, those that the verse is describing as Bnei Israel, are what? One-fifth. So V'chamushim alu Bnei Israel. But don't think that all the Jews are at such a low level. One-fifth of those Jews, they are chamushim, they are armed. What does it mean armed? Spiritually armed. And those were one-fifth. Do you understand? So now we understand the change here. In the beginning it's Am. The Am thought that it's Pharaoh that took us out of Egypt. The Am had to be taken the long way, not the short way. But don't worry, you think that everybody was that way. No, v'chamushim alu bnei Israel, it was still one-fifth of tzaddikim, a very righteous man. Okay? And to prove my point, but I think this is an overwhelming proof to this point, which is that not only the righteous people went out, right? What? No, well, the truth is that they didn't. But you see later on, if you just turn the page to chapter 14, verse number 11, 14, Yudalet, Yudalef. Okay? Now we are standing in front of the Red Sea. On the one side, Jews see Pharaoh approaching. On the other side is the water. Where should we go? So listen to the reaction of some Jews. Wait. Verse number 11. Vayomru el Moshe. Now, he doesn't say neither Am nor Bnei Israel. Vayomru. Some people said to Moshe, Hamibli ein kvarim b'mitzrayim? Aren't there enough burial places in Egypt? Lekachtanu lamud b'midbar? You took us out that we should die in the desert? Mazot asita lanu lotziyanu mimitzrayim? What did you do to us to take us out of Egypt? Verse number 12. Halo ze hadavar asher dibarnu elecha b'mitzrayim? Didn't we tell you in Egypt, you Moshe, you stubborn man? Chadal mimenu, leave us alone. V'navdan mitzrayim, we are perfectly happy working here. Kitov lanu avodet mitzrayim mimutenu amidvar. We would rather work in Egypt than die in the desert. Why didn't we tell you that? And I'm asking you, if only one-fifth of the tzaddikim died and four-fifths of the masses died and one-fifth, just the very righteous, went out, who are the people who are saying, didn't we tell you so? Right? That, to my mind, proves beyond any doubt that many people who did not deserve, they also went out. And those are the people that are telling Moshe, didn't we tell you that? Okay? All right. So now, let's go on. we'll skip now to chapter 14, to the beginning of chapter 14. Now, I'm going to point out a few great, great difficulties in chapter 14. Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. Now, I just want to, before I start chapter 14, I just want to show you where we are geographically in verse number 20 of last chapter, the one that we just finished here. Verse number 20, Chof. Vayisu misukot, they left from a certain city called Sukkot. Vayachanu be'etam, and they came to a certain place. We have no idea where it is, Etam, but the Torah describes, you know where it is. Biktzei Hamidbar. So what's the Ktzei Hamidbar? The what?
The edge of
the wilderness, of the desert. In other words, so Etam is the point between what and what? Between Egypt and the wilderness and the desert. Isn't that the point? Okay. So fine. So they left Egypt. And now they're going into the desert, right? So now it's really the beginning of the midbar, the journey. So let's go back to chapter 14, or let's go forward to chapter 14. Daber el bnei Israel. Tell the Jewish people. Now, the Jewish people expect now to God should tell them what? Continue now. Start crossing the desert, true? No. V'yoshuvu, let them go back. You hear? So they are going to one direction. No, turn back. Turn back. V'yachanu lifnei pi hachirot. Come to a certain place called pi hachirot, between this point and this point, ben migdolo ben mayam. Lifnei Baal Tzefon. There is a worship place there called Baal Tzefon Nichicho. Right across Baal Tzefon, tachanu al hayam. You settle down there, settle there by the sea. And you know what's going to happen, says God to Moshe, verse number 3. Perplexed. Nevuchim heim ba'aretz. They are lost, these Jews. Sagar aleihem hamidbar. You know, lisgor. Closed, right? Closed. Aleihem on them. The desert is closed in front of. Who sagar? Who is that? Who closed it? Sagar aleihem. Third person, singular. Sagar. He closed. Who is he? Their God. God, right? God. Or whoever it is, but somebody closed the door to the desert for the Jews. They can't go into the desert. So what's going to happen then? Right? What's the importance that Paro is going to think they are lost? V'chizakti et leif Paro. So at that point, Paro will harden his heart again. V'radaf acharehem, and he will pursue you. V'ikavda befaro v'chol chelo. So what's the connection here? Oh, the Jews are lost. Let's go after them. And if they are not lost, we can go after them. What's the connection here? Ah, the Jews are lost. Ah, let's go after them. Which means?
It's a trap.
Oh, now the protector is not there for some reason, right? So therefore, this is... So that's the connection. So that's the connection. They are lost, therefore we can go after them. So what's going to happen is that Paro is going to go after them. And then v'yodu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. So at that point, something will happen, and it will be final, right? The presence of God will be final, because up to now it's va'yi b'shalach paroi. Paro is too powerful in the mind of the Jews still, right?
Yeah, but he doesn't end by talking about the Jews. He's saying, and Egypt will know that he's a
Jew. Exactly. It's also a purpose. It's not that's not a purpose. Egypt will know that.
Doesn't Egypt already know after the last?
Oh, not really, because Egypt survived and Paro is still powerful. They are still very powerful. And that's the proof. When Paro says, let's go run after the Jews, they run after the Jews. It was a very temporary feeling. You know what Maimonides says concerning miracles. It's an incredible statement in Maimonides. Miracles don't prove anything. Miracles don't prove anything. It's only a temporary reaction to something which overwhelms you. So temporarily you're overwhelmed. What happens a few days later? Start thinking, hey, wait a second, who knows? Did I see right? Or perhaps this happened or that happened. Miracles don't prove anything. This is why, says the Rambam, says Maimonides, that when it says by the crossing of the Red Sea, even for the Jews, it says, Vayaminu Bashem, they believed in God, Uv Moshe Avdo. You know what's missing? The word Le'olom, forever. It doesn't say forever. Why? Because it was only temporary. You know when an experience becomes forever? In other words, it has an impact forever? If it's your own personal prophetic experience, like Sinai. So by Sinai, it does say Le'olam. Why? Because Sinai is no miracle. Sinai is a personal experience of prophecy. That's no miracle. A miracle? A miracle can really shock you for a few days. And then you go back, you start asking yourself questions, right? How many times does it happen? You have something incredible happens to you. And you say to yourself, well, such a thing, well, that will make me religious, definitely, right? A few days happen, you know, it's the same, you know, the same person. You're the same person. Why? Because that's the way a personality always rationalizes things that happen to him, okay? So this is what it means. The Egyptians were overwhelmed by the plagues for a few days. A few days later, when Pharaoh says, let's run after the Jews. Sure, let's go. Why not? Why not? What about the plagues? Yeah, but that was 6 days ago. I mean, you know, or 3 days ago. 3 days later, they're already ready to run after the Jews. So now, let's go on. Verse 9. Yeah. Again?
70 people died in each household.
Correct. So you have a fascinating statement. You know, it's I'm just saying it because you asked the question. What about those, the same people who lost their own children? They are going to run after those. That impact should have lasted longer. One of the great, great commentaries of last century, he brings proofs. We didn't go into it last week. He brings very good proof that from the soldiers of Pharaoh, the firstborn didn't die. Why? Because the idea of the firstborn, it means the leaders of the families. But Pharaoh had people who worked for him, soldiers, right? By them, being firstborn meant nothing, because what meant anything was the word of Pharaoh. That was their job. They weren't part of the nation of Egypt. It was a different status. They were servants of Pharaoh, and that's a different status. You hear, there are two types of people: Egyptian citizen, and there are the soldiers of Pharaoh, the people who do anything for Pharaoh at any moment. Of them, not one of the firstborn died. Why? Because that quality of the firstborn was lost for them. They became subservient from the moment they are born. You hear? So it comes out, according to this, that this soldiers of Pharaoh didn't lose people in their families. So that, according to this idea, that will answer your question too. Those people who are ready to run after the Jews, the soldiers didn't lose anybody in their families. Okay? Exactly. They died, yeah. But it's not me. You know?
I'm sorry, I wasn't here last week. You probably went over this, but Pharaoh wasn't a firstborn. He was a leader
for himself. Well, it happened to be that Pharaoh himself was a firstborn. He was a firstborn, he was the exception pointed out in the Torah. He was the exception. He was left in order that he should experience the whole thing. Okay, let's go on. Now comes the real difficulty. Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim, and it was told to the king of Egypt. It was told to him. He had spies, right? He had a good intelligence service, and he was told. How did he know that the Jews turned back? Spies, he had spies. Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim. Listen to the words here. Ki borach ho'om. Borach, you know what the word borach means? Livroach, escape. Escape? Who escaped? He sent them out. I mean, they escaped.
No, the first 3 days.
Says Rashi here, you know what happened here? This is after 3 days. And people, the spies came back and told them they didn't start coming back. If they don't come back, that means they are escaping. Because Paro all of a sudden is saying to himself, they only told me that they are leaving for 3 days.
How is that justified anyway?
To what?
Moshe was lying to him.
Well, no, that's a different story. We'll see. Moshe doesn't lie. Moshe doesn't lie. Right. Yeah, what? Yeah, we'll see. We'll speak about it. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Sure, he's the one who proposes it. Moshe Rabbeinu proposes it 3 days. But Paroi just sends him out. Right? Paroi says, just go. Go. Since when does he doesn't even talk about the 3 days. So all of a sudden, he really meant for the Jews to come back after 3 days? But then, besides the point, what does that have to do with the Jews having returned? That it doesn't fit. I mean, so that's nothing to do. It doesn't make any difference. What about if the Jews would have gone into the desert? Paroi could still have claimed it's after 3 days. Why didn't they come back? So, right. Let's go on. Vayehafech levav paro vavadav elaham. And their whole heart turned around concerning the Jews, which means that they had a change of heart concerning the Jews. Vayomru, and they said to themselves, Mazot asita kishilachnu et Israel miavdeinu. Why did we let the Jews out? Right. We made a mistake. We can grow, we can become powerful without the Jews. So let's get back the Jews. So he starts running after the Jews. Right. Kishilachnu es Israel, right? Israel, the power. Israel, the word Israel means the power of Israel. The power of the Jews, right? How can we survive without the power of the Jews? But you hear the problem of the 3 days. What's going on here? Paro sent them out, and all of a sudden he says, hey, how about those 3 days that you mentioned a long time ago? What's the point? What's the idea? And how is it connected with the fact that Paro says, Sagar Aleihem Hamidbar, God closed off the desert for them? What does that have to do with the 3 days? So let me tell you what is mentioned. What was it meant when Moshe says to the Jew, to Paro, we are going out for 3 days? Now, that's exactly, it doesn't mean we are going for 3 days and then we are coming back. What it really means, we are going for the purpose of something that we have to do for 3 days. Now, what is it that the Jews do in the desert for 3 days? There is something specific that they do in the desert for 3 days. You know what 3 days? It's called Shloshet Yemei Hagbalah, the 3 days of purification before God gives them the Torah. That's what the Jews have to do. The giving of the Torah is something that God does to the Jews. What we have to do is to prepare ourselves for 3 days. Okay, and we can't do it here. We must do it outside of Egypt. We need 3 days. And after 3 days, and I don't know when those days will start, whenever they will start, then God will give us either an okay. He will say, yes, I have agreed with your preparations. You are well prepared. Or God may reject us. We don't know what God is going to do. We must prepare ourselves. Okay? Implication. What happens if God accepts us as his nation? Then we'll never come back. What happens if God rejects us? Then we may come back. The point is that we need to prepare ourselves for 3 days. Okay? Now, what happens in Pharaoh's mind? When he realizes that the Jews came to the desert and they turned back, he said to himself, oh, now I know what happened. They have been rejected. God just started counting the 3 days right away. God could have waited to start counting the 3 days, but obviously God started counting the 3 days right away. Was the proof? You see, he rejected them already. Was the proof that he rejected them? He closed up. And there's the word nevuchim heim ba'aretz, perplexed. I mean, they are lost, which means that God rejected them. Oh, if God rejected them, perfect. So now for sure they should come back. Isn't that the deal? And they didn't come back. You hear the connection. If God wouldn't have rejected them, then you can say, well, the 3 days didn't happen yet. A year can go by and we can say the 3 days didn't happen yet. But once I know that God rejected them, then the 3 days already happened. So why don't you come start coming back? You hear the point that Pharaoh is saying here. Okay. What? Right. So this is what happened. And at that point, he decides in verse number 6, Vayesor et Rechbo, he ties up, he prepares his chariot, that Amo, his nation, those are the people I told you, his soldiers, Lakachimo, his soldiers. And who were they? Vaykach Sheish Meot Rechev Bachur, the special riders, the whole Rechev Mitraim Vesholishim Al Kulo, and other people. And he runs after the Jews. And this is what I was telling you before, the reaction of the Jews. Verse number 9. Vayardefu Mitraim Achareihem Vayasigu Otam Chonim Al Hayam. They came to the Jews, they met them when the Jews were by the water. Who was there? Kol sus rechef paro. All the horses and the chariots of Paro. And in verse number 10, ufaroi hikriv, and as Paro comes close, vayisub nei Yisrael eteinehem, v'hinei Mitzrayim nosei achareihem. They see who is coming? The Egyptians. Vayir'u me'od. This is the reaction of some of the Jews. Vayir'u, they feared God. Vayitzakub nei Yisrael el Hashem, and they prayed to God. They didn't complain. Those are the Jews who don't complain. In verse number 11, Vayomru el Moshe, a different group came to Moshe, and they said, Hamibli en kvarim b'mitzrayim, etc., etc. That's what we read before. Those are the people who complain. They say, you see, it's all your fault. Because the first one prayed.
And it says Israelites. It doesn't say Am.
Right. But we even know that they did two different things. The first one were busy praying, not talking to Moshe. The second group, in verse number 11, they are busy talking to Moshe, not praying. Okay?
So then Moshe wasn't on the first group.
Again?
So then Moshe wasn't on the
Well, he's a category by itself. Vayomer Moshe el Ha'am. And in verse number 13, Moshe turns to everybody, says, no one should fear. There is no reason for you to complain. Nothing. You'll see that God has a plan here. In verse number 14, Hashem yilachem lachem. God will fight for you. You won't even have to fight. Ve'atem tacharishun. You just keep quiet and watch. So you are just the spectators. You don't even take part of the actual fighting. Hashem yilachem lachem ve'atem tacharishun. He's saying to everybody, saying, those complainers shouldn't complain, and those who are praying, stop praying, stop praying. So one of the why
stop praying? Do something.
Right, exactly. Don't you just sit back, relax, and watch things as they happen. Now, usually we don't say that. Usually we say, take matters into your own hands, you know, just God will help you, but take matters into your own hands. So one of the great Hasidic commentaries says, you know what Moshe was doing here? Remember, everything which happens now will be repeated in future generations, especially such a thing that has to do with the redemption. Okay. So Moshe wants to make sure that in the future, when the Jews have to be redeemed, it will be completely independent of their prayers and of their merits. So therefore, he doesn't want them to pray now. Why? Because if they pray now, it will establish a precedent that Hashem helps the Jews when the Jews turn to God. He doesn't want that. He wants to make sure that God will help the Jews even if they don't turn to God. So therefore, in order to establish the pattern, he says to them, you know what? Don't even pray. Because I know that God will help you. So if you don't pray, you'll establish the pattern that in the future, when the day will come, there'll be many, many Jews who won't be praying. I want them to be safe too. Therefore, don't pray. Do you hear what this Sefatem is saying? Incredible.
Can I ask you a melech?
Right?
We're talking about Mashiach's time.
No, we're talking about Mashiach's time. We are talking about... But we are talking specifically about the times of the Mashiach. That's what it is. The times of the Mashiach, I mean, there'll be many Jews who don't turn to God. Well, they shouldn't be saved. Now it's established the pattern. Even if you don't pray, you're going to be saved. Now, okay, we'll stop here.
I feel better.